The content of this episode should not be confused with treatment advice or direction given from a mental health professional. Nothing contained in this podcast was made or intended to supplement or supersede relations with mental health providers or treatment. While Jeremy Levitt is a licensed marriage and family therapist, he is not functioning as a mental health provider in this podcast. The same is considered for any professional that may appear on the show. Their views are solely their own and do not reflect any company or profession they may represent.
Welcome to Mind the Gap, where teens have a voice and parents learn to listen to that voice. Here we will talk with teens about their everyday challenges and accomplishments and learn what they are facing daily and what their needs are. As parents, we will learn valuable skills from a licensed marriage and family therapist on how to be aware of the gap in communication and close that gap. Welcome to Mind the Gap. Welcome to Mind the Gap. Thank you for always coming back and listening. We appreciate you. We want to let you know that we're going to do our very best to continue recording and speaking with teens as we navigate these difficult times that we're experiencing right now. We hope you'll be patient with us as we try and learn new programs to help have the best sound that we can possibly have. So with that, enjoy this next episode.
All right, we'd like to welcome everybody back to Mind the Gap today. We're excited to have a conversation with Austin, and we want to welcome Quincy here with us as well. Hi, Quincy.
Hi.
We're glad to have you on with us. We wanted some outside perspective other than just Austin on talking today a little bit about mental health and how we're helping our children get through these tough times. And I know as a mom, it's hard for me to figure out how to help my kids because I have my own anxieties and issues with everything that's going on. But the struggle for me is to just make sure that they are going to come out of this on top. So I guess, Jeremy, what I need is some help.
So, yeah, you and everybody else, because I'm sure most people, at least in our city, and I think most cities have canceled school at this point, but we're even on more lockdown here in Las Vegas where we're not supposed to leave our house or go shopping unless it's a necessity. And so there's a lot of stressors tied to the social isolation and the unknown. And so I guarantee you, Sherry, what you're feeling is what a majority of my clients that are coming in right now are feeling, are increased rates of anxiety. And I hesitate to call it depression, but more, they feel more funky. They feel more moody. Maybe they are dealing with some depression already and it's just a little bit worse now. And I'm seeing that in the kids as well. So it's a very timely topic to start talking about some of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking with one of my friends the other day, and she has a son that's as busy as I know Austin and Quincy are. I mean, from the time they were in middle school, elementary school, these kids have had activities every single day. They don't have free time. No free time. Super tight schedules. Something to look forward to every single day. To now, there's literally nothing. Everything's been canceled. And my friend was saying her son said he had, you know, the first week off of school was great. He's like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
He's out doing stuff. He's riding his razor and, you know, he's out shooting his guns and all that, whatever. Second weekend, he's going, Mom, when are we going back to school? You know?
Yep.
But you start to worry about these kids who are so busy and now they have nothing.
Yeah. And they've lost a lot of their tools that they've used to cope.
Yeah.
And they were all good tools. Like they were playing sports and they were socially interacting. And so I think it's great that now we get the opportunity to talk about other ways to cope, because there's going to be other times in life where you can't do your normal coping skills because of work, because of something. And so I'm glad we're talking about the things we're going to talk about today, because it's going to be super useful.
Yeah. Austin, Quincy, how are you guys feeling? I know we're at a school. It's been a week. The first week was probably okay.
It's been great, actually. I'm loving it.
You're loving being out of school?
I'm going to keep loving it.
What are you doing with your time?
I just find stuff to throw into my schedule. Like, I've been going on lots of hikes lately, hanging out with some friends, or the friends that I'm allowed to hang out with, at least.
What is that one friend?
That's one.
Quincy.
She's here. She's here with us. Everybody else has coronavirus, so.
How are you dealing with the unknowns with school? Like, am I going back? Am I not going back? How are you dealing with that?
I just have my fingers crossed that it's not going to come back. I'm just waiting for that day the governor says it's done.
We're done. What if he says you have to redo the whole quarter?
I'm not doing that. No way.
All right.
They can't force all of us, right?
I guess you could try that. That hasn't worked well in the past, but it's worth a shot.
Putzi, how do you feel about the uncertainties of school and sports and everything else? Because you're super busy too. I mean, this girl's got track, she's got soccer, she's got school, she's got a lot going on.
Yeah, I just think it's really weird right now not having anything to do with like sports and stuff, because sports has been my life for so long, so that it's weird that it's just taken away so quickly, so we have to find other things to fill our time. So it's just really strange at this point.
Like play ping pong.
So are you, just side note, are you guys watching any ESPN lately?
I have a little bit.
So if you get to some of those like lower ESPN channels, like past ESPN2, they've got like battle juggling.
Oh, yeah.
I saw people playing ping pongs, but with a volleyball in their head.
Yeah, I saw that too. Like an atomic bomb with his head. That's what they called it.
Oh, man. So there's some sports, man. You just got to find a new sport.
And there's also death diving. Did you see that?
No.
They tell jump me off what like death a 40, it's like a 40-foot platform. They jump and they have to pretend like they're going to belly flop. And they'll like hold their ankles and then last second they like dive.
Oh.
Crazy.
That sounds like a challenge.
Maybe that's a good thing. We're like learning new things, right? We're finding ways to entertain ourselves that are in new ways.
Yeah, and that's the human condition, right? Like, if I can tell you one thing I've learned about humans, studying humans for the last 8 to 10 years, is that we are resilient and we adapt very, very easily. So whatever this is going to throw at us, whether it's a school lockdown, whether it's a whole city lockdown, we will adapt and we will be just fine. As long as we can get through those first awkward days or weeks where we're trying to figure it all out. But we will be okay for sure.
I think my two things that I could think about is that it's hard because there's really nothing to look forward to because it's so unknown. Right? Like, we don't even know if the kids are going back to school. We don't know if they're going back in 2 weeks. We don't know if the shops are opening in 2 weeks, if the shops are going to be closed for 3 months. I think that unknown is very unsettling.
So think about, though, and this will lead us into our first tool, but think about what is known. Like, focus for a second on what is known and maybe name a few. What do you know?
I know that I have all 5 kids under my roof, and I'm grateful for that.
Okay.
I don't know. What are some ones that you guys can think of?
I don't really know.
I know that you know that I love you.
I do know that.
You know that your parents have your back?
I do know that.
Okay, so you know you're loved. You know you have your kids with you. I think a lot of us, at least for now, I know this may seem a little insensitive to say it because I know there's some people that don't know this right now. But for the majority of us, we know we're going to eat our next meal, right? And that's not everybody, but like majority of us know that. And we know that there are people working on a solution. We know that this isn't going to kill 99% of us, right? Like, so we know a lot of things. And so that leads us into one of the most brilliant studies I've ever seen. So there's this UCLA neuroscientist. His name is Alex Korb. And he wanted to find out, because a lot of people take medications for depression and anxiety, and he wanted to find out, well, a lot of those medications take 3 to 5 weeks to start working. What could people do in the meantime that would give them a similar benefit without taking the med necessarily, or while the med was building up in their system? And the number one thing he found out of the 4 was gratitude. And Sherry, you had just mentioned that you were grateful. But he found that gratitude is similar to taking Prozac in the brain.
Wow.
Right? And he talked a lot about, it's not just, you know, I'm grateful for my kids or I'm grateful for food. He says the best way to do it is to find 3 things, at least 3 things every day that you're grateful for that are specific to the day. Right? It has to be specific. So I guess Austin or Quincy, what are some things you're grateful for today that you couldn't say about yesterday?
Well, today we had a ping pong tournament at my house. So I'm grateful for my family members who get to come back from Tucson to come visit us and play ping pong with us.
It's awesome. What about you, Austin?
I'm grateful for Quincy and her mom for having the ability to fix my hair. Hopefully we can do that tomorrow. I didn't think I'd need to be grateful for that yesterday, but today I'm definitely.
Just to let everybody know, Austin bleached his hair. He's normally super dark, and he bleached his hair. So
yeah, I went from black to
Justin Bieber,
orange. Yep, copper, brass. Yep, and my brother did it for me, and he missed some spots, so now there's like black patches.
I love it. So, what about you, Sherry?
Well, today my husband just went to Arizona to take a test to become licensed in Arizona to expand our practice into Arizona.
Sweet.
So I was grateful that he was able to go and do that today.
That's really cool. Yeah. So what this does for us is when we take an antidepressant, it's working on two neurotransmitters, dopamine and serotonin. Like a medication like Wellbutrin, some of you may have heard of, works on dopamine. Prozac, we mentioned, works on serotonin. And gratitude works the same way. When we practice active gratitude in that way, we actually release dopamine and serotonin. And the funny thing is we don't even need to find something to be grateful for. Just the act of looking for something to be grateful for is enough to get those neurotransmitters going, right? So I want you to imagine, you know, if I gave you the assignment, every day you need to find three things that you're grateful for. And you knew every day at the end of the day, I was going to ask you, okay, what three things are you grateful for? What do you think your brain's going to do all day?
You're thinking of things that you're grateful for.
It's going to be looking for things. Yeah, it's going to be looking for things to be grateful for. And just looking for them is enough to get dopamine and serotonin going in your brain, which is the happy chemical and the feel-good chemical, or the chill chemical. So it's really, really cool. And you're also creating positive feedback loops, right? So if you're practicing gratitude and you're sharing that with other people, you are having an effect on the environment around you. You become contagious, I guess, for lack of a better word. They become great at gratitude and it has an effect on you as well. So it's really, really cool. In times like these, Brené Brown, she's one of my favorite psychologists ever. She talks about foreboding joy and how we have a hard time feeling joy, or we're maybe even afraid to feel joy in times like these. But the antidote to that is gratitude. So gratitude works in a lot of different ways. So number one, everyone get your pen and paper, write, practice gratitude, three things every day that are specific to the day. Okay? That's the number one thing he found. How do you feel about that idea, Sherry?
You know, I love that because in 1998, I left this country to go to Northern Ireland, Ireland, to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And before I left, I had a friend give me this journal, and I hadn't really looked at it and opened it actually until I got to the island. And it was list three things that you're grateful for every day. And I kind of thought, oh, that's super easy. Man, I'm in Ireland. Man, this country's so beautiful. And after about a week, I started having to get super creative and to start thinking about on a daily basis, even in the hardest days that I had out there. There were some really hard days, but I was actually super grateful for that because I wrote it every single day. And throughout the day, I had to focus on, okay, even though it's freezing cold, I can't get warm, I'm hungry, I'm wet, I want to go home. What are the things that I'm grateful for? And I would actually look for things throughout the day so that I would have something to write in my journal that night in that book. And I still have that book to this day. So I know that it's important and I know that it works.
What I think specifically in times like this where it is unknown, it helps us to focus on the knowns, and the gratitude helps us with that.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, when you really don't know if you're going back to school this semester, I know Austin's kind of excited about that possibility, but some kids aren't, or I don't know, maybe one of their loved ones is in the hospital with the virus right now. It sure does help people just to focus on the grateful things. Like, I remember when my grandma was sick and she was in hospice. So she was on her way out. She was about to graduate life. And I was just grateful that, you know, there was a place that she could go that wasn't a hospital setting, that was more like a home. And it was just a more peaceful place. Like, even in that horrible, horrible situation where I'm watching my grandma pass away, I could find things that were great, I was grateful for. So I think it's a powerful, powerful tool.
Yeah, it's a great skill to learn.
Okay, so you ready for number two? Number two, it sounds counterintuitive, but it's labeling negative emotions. Okay? And what that would mean is spending some time and figuring out what you're feeling and putting a word to it. And again, it sounds counterintuitive because a lot of people are like, why? I don't want to focus on the negative. But a lot of times what happens when we get into those negative cycles of thinking negatively and getting into those funky patterns is we haven't identified what we're feeling yet. We know we're feeling something and our brain is like trying to solve the problem. And so by you labeling it, you're solving the problem. Your brain doesn't have to worry about it anymore, right? So label negative emotions. And so the way they did this is they hooked people up to all these scanners and they showed them pictures of people in obvious distress, right? And they knew from past studies that if I was to show you a picture of a little kid that was obviously scared, your neurotransmitters would match what that little kid's neurotransmitters would be. Like, you would start to feel what that kid's feeling a little bit, okay? And what they noticed is, and that's our ability to empathize with other people. You know, if Quincy's sad and you see her sad, you feel that, don't you?
Yeah.
Right? You may not be able to feel like exactly what she's feeling, but you know she's sad and you feel for her.
Yeah, I do.
Right? It's what makes us want to go put our arm around people and give them a hug. Right?
Yeah, right about that.
So we see the picture, or they would show the picture, and the neurotransmitters would flow. But when they asked the person that looked at that picture, what do you think that person's feeling? And they labeled it. Then the other system started up and started to regulate those chemicals and started to control it and started to bring it down. Even better is if you can make a story or create a narrative of why you might feel that way. So what happens when they showed people these pictures of a little kid in obvious distress that was scared, and they said, I think he's scared. So then they started to feel more normal. The stress hormones started to lower. But then when they said, okay, now tell me a story as to why that kid might feel that way. And they said, well, I think he turned around in the grocery store and his mom wasn't there. He got lost in the store. Then the positive chemicals started to flow in, right? So labeling negative emotions is really, really powerful. So powerful, in fact, that it works for other people. It doesn't have to be with you. If Quincy's upset, or I'm using Quincy this time. If Austin's upset, right, because his hair's bleached and he doesn't like it, and Quincy was to tell Austin, I get the sense that you're feeling like a little overwhelmed or a little embarrassed or a little this or a little that, right? That actually produces the positive chemicals in Austin. Somebody else labeling your emotion accurately helps too. And like, something that everyone's probably familiar with is they use this in law enforcement. FBI negotiators, one of their number one tactics they use is to empathize with that person that they're negotiating with that's holding people hostage and trying to label what they feel, right? And that actually starts to release, you know, it calms that amygdala down, the fight, flight, or fright response, and they start to feel a little bit more normal. And then normally they can talk logically to that person after that. So this is a really, really powerful tool. And it's kind of like counterintuitive. Like I said, people will try to suppress their emotions thinking it helps, but that just backfires because your brain's still trying to resolve the problem and it gets worse and worse. So I don't know, Austin, what do you think are some ways, because there's some very tried and true ways people do this already, and maybe they don't know that they're doing it. Any ideas of some ways people label emotions?
Sometimes I'll have a negative emotion or I'll act harshly to like one of my siblings or something. And I have to like kind of step back and think like, oh, like I probably shouldn't be doing that. That's like negative. I should probably be trying to be nicer to my siblings. I should try to do this chore with a better attitude and stuff like that.
Yeah. So that helps out a ton. And I'll tell you, you wouldn't be able to do that. Like, let's say your mom gave you a chore and you're like, screw that crap, I ain't doing that, right? And you get all sassy with your mom, right? you can't correct that in your brain until you realize, oh, I was feeling controlled or I was feeling talked down to. Like, you had to recognize that somewhere before you could be like, hey, mom, I'm sorry. Right. So one of the number one ways people do this already is journaling. People don't recognize they're doing this, but journaling is super, super useful in this. I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Sherry. Does that sound counterintuitive to you, or does that make sense?
No, I think it's great because I've always believed the philosophy too, like, before you react, give yourself some time to, well, not always, I don't always do it, but I know the philosophy is there. And it's wise philosophy. I mean, it's like every coach says, before you come and you're frustrated with me, give yourself 24 hours. And my dad has always said, write down your thoughts two or three times before you actually want to act on them.
Yeah.
And so I've done that, you know, I journal and it's, you get a lot of your frustration out and then you go back and read it, you're like, that wasn't really that bad. You know, because you can go back and see the situation a little bit more clearly, I guess.
So I want to practice this with Austin. Can we practice this with you, Austin?
Let's practice.
All right. So there's a really good tool, especially for us men who have a hard time naming what we feel. So Austin, pull out your phone and okay. Go to Google. Go to the Google machine. Okay. And type, go to Google Images and type in emotion wheel.
Emotion wheel.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, now you should see, it looks like a circle with a whole bunch of colors on it.
Yes, a lot of them.
Okay, so open one of those up, the one with the most words on it. Just pop it open and look at it. And I want you to find an emotion that better explains how you're feeling about your hair.
Okay.
But more than just like upset or whatever it is.
Should I find one too?
Yeah. Well, I went to the, I could either have gone to the sadness, anger, or surprise subcategory.
Those are the core ones, right?
Yeah, those are
in the
core.
Middle. So you want to find one out in those outer circles that's within that area.
Yeah, I think I'd put dismayed.
Okay, I like that. It's a good one. Sherry, maybe you find one about how you feel about school and sports being canceled.
You know, I think I'm not handling it as much as well as the kids are. And it's funny because I think it's been my whole life I'm 42 and I've never not had it. And so I think for me, it's still, I think Austin's moving beyond it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still struggling.
Is there an emotion in there that describes what you're feeling more accurately?
Oh gosh, there's too many. Aggravated, annoyed.
Good.
Speechless. They're all on that right side.
Yeah. So, like, parents, just use that tool. Especially kids. Kids don't quite know what they're feeling. They haven't quite figured out how to verbalize it. It's a really good tool for you to share with your kids or your spouse if you, like, need to have a conversation. And if you can get them to label that emotion, you can usually get a conversation started too. So
yeah, that's cool.
That's number two. And I like journaling because I think our brain, I know our brain works differently when we journal. A different part of our brain highlights. So if you can, you know, journal it and talk about it, even better. So number two is label your negative emotions. We should not be running from our emotions in this time. We should be at least naming them so our brain doesn't have to sit there and try to figure it out. Okay. Number three is a little bit more about anxiety than anything. And I know there's a lot of anxiety right now. But number three would be just go ahead and make a decision. So the key tenet here is don't worry about making a right decision or a wrong decision. Just make a good enough decision, right? Because I think 99% of the times, people that look back don't ever regret a good enough decision. I will read you what this neuroscientist wrote in his book about it. He says, making decisions includes creating intentions and setting goals. All three are part of the same neural circuitry and engage the prefrontal cortex in a positive way, reducing worry and anxiety. So I don't know if people know this or not, but worrying about something actually gives you dopamine, a little hit of dopamine. And dopamine is addictive. We like it. And so when you worry about something, you're getting a little bit of dopamine. And so you think you're solving the problem when in reality, you're just getting more dopamine and more dopamine and more dopamine, and you're never solving the problem. So he talks about making a decision. He goes, making decisions also helps overcome striatum activity, which usually pulls you towards negative impulses and routines. Finally, making decisions changes your perception of the world, finding solutions to your problems, and calming the limbic system. So he talks about making a good enough decision. Don't worry about making the best decision. Don't worry about right decisions or wrong decisions. Just make a good enough decision. You know, I just watched Frozen 2. I'm not afraid to admit it. And there's that song or that phrase in there, like, do the next right thing. And while I agree with that on premise, I think sometimes people can go into a panic attack thinking about what the right thing is. So I'll disagree with that on that sense and say, stop worrying about doing the next right thing. Do the next good enough thing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, just when you had mentioned that about worrying actually releases dopamine and that's addictive and people go into that. I know people like that, that they constantly worry about everything. And it's just interesting that you said that, that it sends some dopamine in there and it's addictive and that's kind of becomes who they are.
Yep. And you're creating pathways.
I know people that way.
Yeah. You're creating pathways and that's kind of where you naturally go in the future if you continue to do that. Right.
How would we help somebody in that? Since I know you said, just have them take a step and just make, you know, do anything, like just move forward. But, you know, I mean, like, I just went on a trip and my nephew was so worried about every little thing. And I just didn't know how to help him get through that and say, well, it's going to be okay. Because in his brain, he really was worried about every little thing.
Well, and that leads to another talk about maybe even more anxiety. But I think even like I have anxiety, we've talked about this before. More often than not, what sets me down that rabbit hole of a panic attack or anxiety is when I'm sitting there worrying about what to do. Right. Yeah. The scientist, he says, we don't choose the things we like. We don't just choose the things we like. We also like the things we choose. He talks about people who are forced to exercise don't get the same benefits because they don't feel like they have a choice. Right. Mm-hmm. So reinforcing the fact that we have a choice, and because when we label it right or wrong, it almost doesn't feel like we have a choice, does it? Like, it's, you have to pick the right thing. Well, let's stop worrying about the right thing. Let's pick a good enough thing and go from there, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I like that.
Right.
I just wonder how awesome, because how does that resonate with you guys? Just like as teenagers, you probably always worry about, like, or maybe you don't worry about it. Like, is this the right thing? But like I was saying, from the teenagers, do you guys feel the pressure to make that right choice, or are you guys in your brains okay with just making the next best choice?
Well, I'm horrible at making decisions. I can't make a decision to save a life. So I usually have to consult with one or more like people to try and like see if what I'm doing is right or I'm on the right path to making it like the next right decision.
Is that because you're worried about making the right decision, or you're worried just about making any decision?
Just any decision. Like, one time I was in the McDonald's drive-thru, and my dad asked what I wanted, and I said I wanted a smoothie. And I didn't want a smoothie, and I don't know why I said I wanted a smoothie. So it's just like, I don't know, I guess pressure is like, it just gets to me, so I can't decide things without like taking the time to think
about it. I love that you mentioned that, because the pressure is the problem, right? If there was no pressure, mm-hmm. because there isn't a right decision or a wrong decision, I don't know if you'd feel the same way, right? Which is hard, because at your age, a lot of kids, do I go to UCLA or do I go to UNR or do I go to BYU? Like, there's all these options. There's all these choices. Are any of them bad?
Probably not.
20 years from now, is it going to matter?
Probably not.
I love the motto or the question, is it going to matter in 1,000 years? Then why am I going to worry about it? If it's not going to matter 2 weeks from now, why am I going to worry about it? Right? So
that's right.
Just consider that. Like, I love make a good enough decision. We got to take the right or wrong off of it. We just got to do what we feel like is best in that moment and just let it go. Especially right now, parents, holy cow. I hope you're not all going crazy with like homeschool regimenting. Like, you drive yourself and your kids nuts.
Yeah, we're pretty chill around here. I've homeschooled for 3 years though, so I've had a pretty chill attitude about it the whole time anyway, which probably isn't the the best attitude.
I'm pretty sure I couldn't handle it. So kudos to you, because I couldn't do it. Okay. Number four. This is a little bit sketchy right now, but it's a good one. So you have to be selective with who you do this with. But human touch is the last thing that he mentioned that is as powerful. He talks about how human touch actually starts to release dopamine. And I always, you know, rely on the studies that talk about 20 seconds. So a 20-second hug starts to release dopamine and serotonin. It starts to help you feel connected to people. So human-to-human contact is really, really important. Really, really important. Now, obviously, you have to be really picky with who you do that with right now.
Yeah. Well, what I like is you can go ahead and say that, because when kids are stuck home with their parents, they have to understand that their parents are going to give them that 20-second hug, because they're not going to get it anywhere else.
So the way they studied this was they had a computer machine throwing a ball. You're playing catch with basically a computer program or with a real person, and they hooked them up to these, it's called functional MRI, fMRI machine, to kind of study what the brain was doing. And the people who thought they were playing with an actual person, or that the computer was controlled by a person, got more dopamine release. It doesn't just make you happier. Human touch, they've studied it increases team performance. It improves academic performance. It improves all kinds of things, right? Austin's looking at Austin. I know what you're thinking.
No wonder I have such good
parents. Honey, I need an A. but even greater than that, like, physical touch reduces pain, right? It helps people reduce pain. So it doesn't have to just be hugs. It could be holding hands. It could be high fives. It could be a back rub. I like hugs. Hugs are the best for me, but there's a research that shows that getting 5 hugs a day for a month has a significant impact on happiness. So, but if you can't get a hug, like, not right now, but like they even talked about in the study about going and getting a massage, anything that increases human-to-human contact is super, super powerful. So look for opportunities to do that in this little quarantine situations. All right.
What I know is that, Mom, I've got kids of all different ages. And when my kids were little, I'm a big snuggler. My kids are big snugglers. So when they were little, we did a lot of, you know, a lot of hugging, a lot of touching, appropriate touching. But I'm just, the older they get, the harder it is, you know. And I think I've mentioned this before. Someone had told me years ago that it's really important to hug your teenagers. And I didn't know why. I just thought, oh, okay, that sounds totally legit. Because they get a lot of hugs when the kids are young. We have a little 5-year-old, and every single night, it's his favorite thing to do before we go to bed is we sit and rock on the rocking chair. And I even told him last night, I said, I'm so glad you rock with Mommy, because Austin's too big and he won't rock with me anymore. And he looked at me and gave me the funniest look. And I said, do you think I should try? And he looked at me and he goes, no, Mom, I'm here for you.
Austin, you've been replaced.
But
I have been.
I think it's really important to make sure that as parents, you do hug your teenagers. Don't forget that, you know, they need that. And I love that the study that you shared that with us, because I think it is really important. What do you guys think about that, Quincy and Austin? Quincy, can you still hug your mom?
Well, I try to hug my mom, but she doesn't like when I hug her. So it becomes like a challenge to see if I can get her to hug me.
It's a good challenge.
That's awesome. So now you tell her the study and she's make her 20 seconds.
I will. Actually, she told me I get one hug a day. And then sometimes I try for a second.
You guys are just rationing toilet paper. You're rationing hugs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, hug your kids. High five your kids. You know, one of the best tools, and this will work with kids too, but when I'm working with married couples and they're like bickering back and forth in my office, right? And they're not listening to each other. If one person can just reach out and like put their hand on the other person's hand or on the other person's leg and just create some contact, like that usually pulls that person back in. So it's even a good tool to get your kids to like come into the conversation and pay attention to you. So there's more to it than just creating happiness. So any final thoughts, Sherry? Those were my 4 things.
These are great. I think these are some amazing tools that we could use and put into place right now with everything that's going on, with all the insecurity. of the world right now, of, you know, our country, of our schools, with our kids and their activities and their lives and everything we have going on. I think these four tools are really going to help us to be successful, come out on top.
Well, if I can make a suggestion, if you guys want to learn more about it, just go get this guy's book. He wrote a book on these four things called The Upward Spiral by Alex Korb, K-O-R-B. It's just brilliant. And it's science. It's not woo-woo, I think this works. I mean, all the studies are there, and it's really effective. And it's not a replacement for medication, but it sure does help. And it helps a ton of people who, you know, maybe don't feel like they need the medication, and maybe they're right, but they just need that little extra boost. We could all benefit from it.
Austin and Quincy, do you guys have any final thoughts as we close out this?
I think sometimes people tend to worry too much, and like you said, have that anxiety about stuff that they don't know or they don't have control over. And if you kind of have the mindset of the next good choice, like you said, and just not worry about it too much, because like in the future, it's not going to matter as much. If you just have that in mind, I think you'll be able to live like more at peace.
What about you, Quincy? What's your final thought for today?
Yeah, well, you kind of said it all, but I don't know. I think it's just, a lot of it's trying to, you know, find a new hobby right now, or trying to not worry as much as you think this isn't going to affect, you know, forever. So hopefully you can just spend some time to learn new things and spend time with people you love.
You know, one of my clients told me today, he said, why am I worried? Either it's going to get better or Jesus is going to come.
So, that's what I think.
That's my new motto.
That's what I'm saying.
But that could create a whole new set of worries for people. So,
yeah.
All right.
More I just have to say, you know what Austin is doing is he's been writing his own song.
Good job.
This has given him time to do things that he probably wouldn't have had time otherwise. So I think it's great, like Quincy said, refine yourself and find new hobbies and new outlets, and use this time to gather with your family and learn more about
them. I want to give you one more. It just popped in my head. Bonus. Schumann resonance. Have you guys ever heard of the Schumann resonance? Have we ever talked about that? So mm-hmm. The Schumann resonance is the Earth emits a frequency 7 times a second every second. And it's a sound. Now, you have to have equipment to pick it up, but you can actually hear it. And next time we're in person, I'll bring a tool for you guys to hear what it sounds like. But what happens is this frequency goes up out of the Earth 7 times a second every second, hits the outer ionosphere, and bounces back down to Earth. And it's so consistent, you can run a clock off of it. And they have done studies on this specific frequency, and it is associated to feelings of well-being and happiness. And it has an effect on people, but we live in a society where we don't have much contact with like the actual Earth, right? Like we're always on cement, we have shoes on, right? So if you can just get outside and take your shoes off and put your feet in the grass or in the dirt, or in the mud, when you look back at some of your happiest moments in life, those are the things that we're doing. We're on the beach, we're out in the woods, we're doing all these amazing things, but we're like literally connecting with this Earth, and it's because we're feeling this frequency. So get outside if you can, people, and go walk in the grass without some shoes on. I promise it helps.
That's awesome. And one of our next episodes will be on the beach, so we'll actually test that.
Yes. Trying to go to Hawaii right now, but they just installed a 2-week quarantine if you show up. So
yes.
No go.
Yeah. And that might not happen before Austin heads out on a mission. So we'll see if that actually happens. So, well, let's wrap up. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. We hope that you find these tools helpful. And again, if you guys want to reach out to us at all, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Mind the Gap. Teens Talk, We Listen.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you'd like to reach out to us, we can be found on Facebook at mindthegap-teenstalkwelisten or on Instagram at mindthegap.welisten.